Let's imagine the not too distant future. You feel more in control of your photos than you ever have before. You look forward to the regular creative dates on your calendar. You're moving forward on that project that means so much to you. You are on fire with inspiration, and you are finally scrapbooking consistently. This is not a hypothetical, it's a real life possibility. And for the first time, I've created a workshop specifically focused on the problem of consistency. It's called Sparked, and I'm excited to share it with you for free. Visit simplescrapper.com/sparked to get access to the training and make this possibility your reality.
And then with more time, I realized that actually creativity and crafting and everything that I stand for really is not an extreme measure. You don't need to devote 10 hours a week to this. It's actually something that can show up in very small ways, but really make a big impact. And I feel like that act of creating and that taking that time is an act of self-compassion.
Welcome to Scrapbook Your Way, the show that explores the breadth of ways to be a memory keeper today. I'm your host, Jennifer Wilson, owner of Simple Scrapper and author of The New Rules of Scrapbooking. This is episode 218. In this episode, I'm joined by Natasha Pitlick to explore self-care and self-compassion for creatives. Our conversation includes Natasha's own journey in finding balance, as well as how she's leveraging that experience to help others. Hey, Natasha, welcome to Scrapbook Your Way.
Hey, Jennifer, thanks so much for having me on the show.
Yes, I am looking forward to chatting with you today. Can you start by sharing a little bit about yourself?
Yes, of course. My name is Natasha Pitlick. I am based in Southwest Florida. It's very hot and humid. I live here with my partner and our two rescue pups. I am a lifelong creative and mental health advocate, and I recently have started a new venture in my own online business, Create with Natasha, which I'm very excited to be able to talk a little bit more about today and how that connects to my creative journey.
Yes, I think it's going to be a fun discussion. So what part of Southwest Florida? I'm not exactly sure even what part is considered Southwest. We were just in Hernando Beach over spring break.
Yes, so Florida is a huge state, right? So I live in Bonita Springs, Florida, which is just south of Fort Myers, which more recently became well known because we got slammed with Hurricane Ian this past year. And so our area became very famous, but we're known for our beaches here that are temporarily closed due to the hurricane, but it's a beautiful area that lots of folks from all over the country come down to visit us.
Oh, fun. And have you always lived there?
No, I am from all over. I immigrated to the U.S. When I was 7. We lived up in New England and then moved here to Florida. And then I lived out in California for 8 years before moving back here. So I am from many different places, but Southwest Florida is where I call home.
And what's your country of origin?
So I was born in England, and my mom is from a small island called Malta in the Mediterranean. So I identify as being of European and Arab descent. I was raised by my mom primarily, so that is the culture I identify most with.
Oh, interesting. I'm sure that plays into some of your scrapbooking stories too.
Yes, for sure.
So what's exciting you right now? We're asking our guests this year to share both a scrapbooky thing as well as a non-scrapbooky thing.
This is always one of my most favorite parts of the show because I'm always so interested to hear what others are loving. So for me, I think right now my non-scrapbooking thing that's really bringing a lot of life to my day-to-day are my morning walks with my two pups. I really have been enjoying the flexibility with my schedule and just being able to prioritize my health a bit more than I have in the past. And starting the day outside with a podcast and my girls is like the best thing for me.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, especially getting a little bit more vitamin D. Now you get sunshine year round, but up here in the north, we're like, oh, the sun is back. Yay.
Yes, I can imagine. For us, it's like the opposite of, you know, up north that in the summer is typically when we are inside because it's just too hot outside. And so I'm really like savoring these last couple weeks where we'll have like, you know, decent temperatures.
Yes, for sure. Before you get into the sauna season.
Mm-hmm. And then for my scrapbooking thing, I am really loving rub-ons. I've been pretty obsessed with rub-ons for several months now. I just think that they are so versatile. They work in planners, journals, layouts for memory keeping. I just, they're really making a comeback, I see, especially in the Coco Daisy kits. And I'm always so excited each month. And that's like the first thing that I'm opening and using when I get the monthly kit.
Yes, yes. I love rub-ons too. They're like kind of the best of stamps as like that super flat layer without the possibility of totally messing everything up.
Totally. And I think this year I'm actually using a spiral bound planner as my primary planner. And I've been very aware of the deco that I'm using in the planner. So really trying to avoid like traditional planner stickers for that bulk. So I really love that the rub-ons can give that look, you know, that creative element without really bulking up. And then you don't have to worry about it bleeding through if the ink can't or the paper can't handle the ink.
Yes, that's such a good tip because I know I've had some, not even spiral bound, but like flush bound, whatever they're mm-hmm, called. But mm-hmm. I've broken the binding because of too many fun things on the inside.
Yes, and I've learned that too. I was using the Hemlock and Oak planner last year, and I was only a few months in, and it was extremely chunky. So I'm really glad that rub-ons are making a comeback and are a part of my regular creative practice.
So what are your favorite sources for rub-ons?
So primarily right now, I am on the Coco Daisy creative team. So I do receive, you know, quite a bit of product from Coco Daisy. And I want to say almost every month there has been a rub-on in the collection. So that's my go-to. I was recently on scrapbook.com to see if there were any designs that I liked or if there was any other options, and I didn't see too many out there. So I think I'm going to have to do a little bit of a deeper dig to find some rub-on options.
I think the primary brand outside of Coco Daisy that I'm aware of is 49 and Market. So if you like kind of like a really like feminine, floral, slightly vintage look, they have a ton of rub-ons in all of their collections.
Yeah, didn't they come out with like a mixed media collection? I think it was like
probably.
Yes. I remember seeing something like that maybe last year on Instagram. So I'm probably going to need to check them out because I love that mixed media effect. But of course, like on my day-to-day planner, I'm typically not going all out with deco like that.
Yes, for sure. For sure. So let's shift gears here to stories for a moment. So we like to ask our guests about their memory keeping bucket list. And these are stories that feel important to tell. They could be big, small, happy, sad, everywhere in between. But for some reason or another, it feels compelling, but you haven't told it yet. So what's one story on your bucket list?
So there's several that I would love to dive into. I do typically focus more on the day-to-day stories. So there's two things that they are somewhat hand in hand. One is our move from LA out here to Southwest Florida. I was not very consistent during those few months of before the move and after the move. And I would love to kind of pause and document that before it's a little too far in the background as far as like remembering the details. And then with that, after a few years here, we were able to purchase our first home, my partner and I. And as I mentioned, like I immigrated here and my partner is first generation American. And a big part of like the American dream for both of us was to own our own home. And it's been really special to have our own space and make it our own. And that's something I haven't really told in a story format and, you know, either a memory keeping or in an insert in my memory planner, but it's something I definitely want to document.
Yeah. Cause I mean, it's one thing to just say like, here's our house and what we did, but to tell that like the deeper, you know, as you said, American dream story, you know, what is the real feeling and meaning behind it? That's going to be really valuable.
Yeah, for sure.
So I wanted to have you on the show today to talk a little bit about self-care for creatives. So for scrapbookers, memory keepers, creative business owners, because I've had so many interactions with you on Instagram and seen some of the things you've posted, and I could tell this is something that you feel really passionate about. So I'd like to start just kind of giving us some context for your history with memory keeping and crafting. How did you find this hobby?
Yes, this is something that is so important to me, both in my creative and my professional journey. I really identify with being a lifelong creative, and I stumbled upon memory keeping back in 2015 when I was going through what I call like my breakdown breakthrough. It's probably one of the toughest chapters that I don't really talk about too much publicly, but I discovered the Happy Planner during this time, and Jenny McGarvey and Amanda Zampelli, who were working for the Happy Planner at that time, and I think I saw them in Michael's. I'm not even too sure how the initial point. Maybe it was on Pinterest, who knows, but I became quickly obsessed with the idea of combining journaling with documenting, and it felt like a really great way to pause as a form of gratitude for what was going on in my life, even if it was a super challenging season. And I think that that really laid the foundation from this love that I have for memory keeping. I always enjoyed keeping journals and junk journals when I was in high school and middle school. So this just felt like such an amazing sweet spot of that journaling and documenting along with that. Every day.
You know, even when Happy Planner first came out, I was like, oh, this is interesting. It's a planner, but within kind of this craft space. And just the branding of it offers so much kind of like promise of getting to that other side. Like we all just want to be, you know, happier. And so it's always just seemed something that's so delightful to me. And that you found that at this particular time in your life seems very serendipitous.
Yeah, it felt super approachable. And that's something that even though I've like stepped away from being Happy Planner obsessed, I still think that one of the things that I look for when it comes to projects or products out there or techniques is the approachability and just the access and making it your own to meet you where you're at. And that's either skill level or life season.
Yes. So I'm curious if you've made any shifts with your projects or formats. You said you're no longer like Happy Planner obsessed as you were before, but really from the perspective of better supporting your mental and physical health.
So because I discovered memory keeping during such a tough chapter, and like I mentioned, that access and approachability, I liked that with my idea of like a planner, is that it felt more informal than maybe what I had seen as like a 12 by 12 layout. I also had always associated scrapbooking with, you know, ladies from the Midwest who were married with two children and two golden retrievers. And that is what I kind of saw as scrapbooking. And it didn't feel like my story, and especially in that season of life, quote unquote, belonged in that format. And so I think one of the biggest like shifts that I've made, especially as my physical health has become more of a focus or priority, not so much by choice, but I was diagnosed with endometriosis in late 2020. And I have been really navigating living with chronic pain and chronic illness for the past, goodness, like 6 years now. And so keeping that accessibility and also that permission that it's okay if what I'm documenting or how I'm documenting looks different than others within the scrapbook community.
Yes, yes. It's so important to take all the options and then filter them through the lens of your passions, your real life, and find out what few options come out on the other end. And that's what we need to be working on, because we can't possibly do everything and to do everything like exactly like what we see online, especially from those who are compensated for what they're creating.
Yeah. I also think that something like a practical thing that I have implemented to shift with how I'm feeling, especially, you know, my energy and my pain levels can really fluctuate. And so sometimes I know that creating, even if it's in a small way, is going to make me feel better. But oftentimes I won't have the full capacity to sit down and do a major project. So what I started to do is list on the notes app on my iPhone, a list of low energy tasks that I, or not even task isn't the right word, but different creative things that I could do to engage my creativity that didn't involve a ton of energy to do so, or space, because often I'm laying horizontally in bed when I am referencing this list. So bed friendly, crafty activities is often what's on that list.
Yes, yes. Do you mind sharing an example of one or two items on that list, just so we can give kind of some specifics to those who may be in a similar boat and are trying to find those approachable, doable from a horizontal position thing? So
yeah, of course, I'd love to. So there are a handful of things that I go to. So on my low energy list, I actually go back to a lot of my roots with stickers, as I did start, you know, with the Happy Planner. And you can take a sticker book anywhere and don't need a ton of tools. So something that I'll do with stickers is, let's say I'll pick a color and I'll have a journal or a notebook, and I will go through one sticker book or two, how many I have at hand, and select stickers that belong to that color. So let's say I'm like, okay, I'm going to pick blue. So I'm just like going through and curating a collection of blue stickers from my sticker stash and just putting them down on the paper to make somewhat of like a sticker collage. I've also done this with themes as well. So, okay, I'm going to look for pink florals or pink structured shapes or more organic shapes. So it's just providing a loose lens, low pressure, low energy, but just, you know, a small way to express my creativity.
Oh, I love that. I think sometimes we think so big picture, big impact, and creativity doesn't have to be the big album project that you've been meaning to do for that giant vacation from 10 years ago. It could be putting some stickers on in a notebook and celebrating that you can do that today.
For sure. And, you know, when I do have more energy on this list, I even have like, okay, higher energy days, but still low, within a low energy capacity, would be to pre-decorate a memory planning page. So I would take any like ephemera or, you know, puppy stickers, still keeping it within something that has adhesive on it already, just to not have to have my adhesive gun with me. And I will kind of slap those down on the page. And it's kind of fun. It's like almost like an art journal page. And then I know that I'll go back and add the photos and journaling later. So that's kind of like maybe two tiers up from just, you know, stickers kind of more randomly to being a little bit more thoughtful on what I'm actually putting down for a cohesive layout look.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much for those examples. I think it's helpful to, like, you know, peek inside and see what you're actually doing. So now I'm curious, because I've seen you do a variety of different things. If you had to choose memory planning versus maybe more traditional scrapbooking in smaller sizes, which one would win out for you?
Oh my gosh, you're going to make me choose, huh? I think that probably memory planning.
And what kind of base for a memory planner are you using now? I think you mentioned Spiral. Is it the Coco Daisy one or something else?
So for memory planning, I am using the Coco Daisy Daisy Planner, but I am using it within the Citrus Twist 6x8 Life Crafted albums, and I am obsessed with this combo. I had been putting it on discs for a long time, but I didn't love how it like sat on the shelf, in the sense that I really will put in different like pocket pages, or like a 6x8 style layout or a traveler's notebook layout within the album. And I just felt like the disc didn't have that structural integrity to hack it. So when I saw that Citrus Twist came out with the larger album size, if it was last year or the year prior, I was thrilled, because I was like, this is exactly what I want. So that's my sweet spot right now.
I am so glad I asked, because I wouldn't have thought of that combo. So I think that might solve some challenges for others as well.
There's a ton of flexibility in it, and I love that.
Yes, yes, yes. When you step back, what has this hobby done for you? I think this kind of just takes us to the point of your experience and kind of bringing you to the present and the shift that you're have gone through.
Yes, for sure. So for me, this hobby, I don't even look at it as a hobby anymore. It's, I think we all have that creative energy and spark within us. And this is just one of the many ways that I get to show up and express my creativity through memory keeping and creative planning. I think for me, a huge thing has been a tool for my mental health and for self-care. Mm. It's just that pause. And like I said, in the beginning, when I initially discovered it, just as a moment of gratitude, it's just very helpful in so many different aspects of my life. And I also think it's been huge because I have been able to connect with so many others, many who have a similar life journey to myself and are maybe documenting, you know, more non-traditional ways of life and sharing that online as well. So that community and the creativity and connection has been huge. And in sharing my work online and on Instagram and on YouTube and different, you know, Facebook communities, a big part of that too has been seeing how impactful it is for small businesses. Both my parents are entrepreneurs, and they really, I've seen how powerful small business is for families. And that's a big shift, you know, especially moving away from, you know, the Happy Planner, how I initially started, to now. And a huge part of when I am spending my money on supplies or designing or supporting other companies in the industry, it's really important to me that I am supporting those smaller mom and pops. And that's kind of bridges into the work that I'm doing now in just really being intentional in, you know, putting your money where your mouth is and really supporting those like important players within your community. And that includes our online scrapbook and creative planning communities.
Yes, yes. So well said. I really appreciate that, that value that you've shared. And it says a lot about you as a person for sure. Let's dive into it. You recently started a business as a virtual assistant and online business manager. And you mentioned this kind of combines a bunch of different skills from your background. So can you talk a little bit more about where your professional journey has taken you?
Yes. So I actually started my professional journey as a K-12 teacher. I shortly moved into instructional coaching within the education space. The big picture, as well as that support role, has always been something I've really valued and felt that I was a good fit for as well. With just my own unique, diverse background as an individual, I've always felt a strength of mine is connecting other individuals and bringing them together in achieving a goal. And so after I got pretty burnt out in education and needed a change, that's about the time that we moved to Southwest Florida here. And I began working in the construction industry, which is a bit random from being a classroom teacher, but it's still overall, though, that big picture and support role and making something happen. So I worked as a project manager in the construction industry. And due to my health, I was really wanting to make a shift to have something that was a bit more sustainable and also to be in an environment that aligned a bit more with my own purpose and my own values. I was working for a company that did a lot of work for very affluent families in the area. And I mean, I was really grateful for the opportunities that I had and all the lessons that I learned through that role, but I was really ready to make that shift. And just due to my health last year, that was a major factor in deciding that, okay, this is the time. I know that I have this skill set to be able to run operations very well in that big picture, strategic, creative thinking skills. I really think that there are a lot of businesses that are online that could really use this support. And that would give me also an opportunity to have some more flexibility within my own schedule, so I could prioritize my health a bit more, which was really being demanded of me at that time.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting because you have this like unique position as someone who knows what it's like to have some limitations, but you're looking also to serve those maybe who have burnt themselves out or are experiencing, you know, mental or physical health issues, and they realize I can't do this by myself anymore. So I think that positions you as, you know, the perfect, you know, partner, because you can identify with your client.
Yeah, definitely. Like I've been there, and you know, both within my roles in education and even towards project management in the construction industry, going through, you know, all of the challenges that COVID brought and all the supply chain issues. Mm-hmm. It's just an immense amount of stress. And I think that it's super important, especially women in business or women who are thought leaders or educators within their, you know, online communities, that they are taking care of themselves while they are doing this great work that they are, you know, set out to do. And I've learned some tough lessons along the way and really also have those concrete skills to assist, you know, women in business to make sure that, hey, let's take a pause and really think at the goals and the landscape that is in front of us so we can be strategic in the way that we're approaching things. So that way we're not running around, you know, like headless chickens, because that's definitely mm-hmm. a recipe for burnout.
Yes, yes, yes. I've been there and back to the other side yeah. again myself. So, so on your website, you are pitching this opportunity for potential clients to get back to operating from an intentional, heart-centered space. So what does that really mean to you, and who is your ideal client?
So for me, I think it is so important that, you know, we are measuring success in other ways that are just outside of measuring profits. I think that one of the greatest measures of success is having a life first business where, you know, women are able to prioritize their life, their health, those important relationships while they are working towards their goals within their professional careers. And the women that I work with are all very purpose driven. They have a big heart for the work that they do. And most of them are online educators within their specific field. So they really need support in setting up systems and procedures and just really kind of the back end and strategy to be able to continue to do the work that they love, but also not burn out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think sometimes small business owners feel like they can only afford to do everything themselves, and then they end up feeling burnt out. And I think this applies to a lot of different people and situations. But like, practically speaking, what are some of these low-hanging fruit self-care steps maybe our listeners could begin with if they're feeling in that position?
So burnout is super common, no matter if you are working inside or outside of the home. I think for many women and folks in your audience, we all wear a lot of different hats. And when we're at that state of overwhelm, everything feels like a lot. So approaching things, you know, especially that low-hanging fruit, I think is really critical in starting to feel those small wins. And I think self-care is often glamorized a bit. It's something, though, that can be approached really easily. I think one of the best ways is looking for where you can take that pause within your day-to-day. And I know this can sound a bit woo-woo, but I think that when we're trying to run around and do all these different tasks and accomplish all these things, that we just forget to just take a breather. And so I think it's looking at where in your day can you just take a breath? You know, like I know I make my coffee every morning. So while I'm waiting for the coffee to brew, instead of, you know, running around and, you know, unloading the dishwasher, making the bed and feeding the dogs, like I can just close my eyes for, you know, 5 seconds and just take a few deep breaths to just recenter myself. And I think that just that practice of grounding ourselves is so helpful in starting to get a better grasp on what we actually need.
Mm, yes, yes, yes. Very, very true. And I think sometimes we can find ourselves there by accident, but once we can recognize what it does and be intentional with it, we can, you know, use it as a tool even more.
Yeah, it's a super powerful tool that I think is often underrated.
So why is hiring help a self-care strategy?
So I believe hiring help is part of an act of self-care is because I really think it is a way to honor your capacity. And I also think it's a huge celebration for growth. I think oftentimes we think, oh, I have to do it all, and almost kind of wearing it. I know I've been there in the past of like, that is Medal of Honor, you know, of just like, I can, you know, I can do all these things. And, you know, that can only be sustained for a certain amount of time when something has to give, right? So I think instead of looking at it as like, you know, something that's, you know, I don't want to say a sign of weakness, but just, you know, met with some, you know, different feelings, I think it's important to celebrate that as a time of growth. Like, look how amazing it is that this idea that you had has grown into this thing that is sustaining you in so many different ways. And it's gotten to the capacity now that for you to best show up for your life in and out of your business, it's time to bring somebody else on.
Very well said. Very well said. So one of, how do I say this? I have experienced this myself and heard it from so many others that maybe someone is ready to ask for help, but they don't know exactly what to ask for help with. So how can creative entrepreneurs identify what they would even put in the hands of someone else?
That's such a great question. And it's definitely something that I hear from my clients on those initial calls is like, I know I need help. I just like, I don't exactly know like how. And I think one of the best things, like a really practical tip is doing a time audit. So there's a great app called Toggle, which is free. You could even do this manually with, you know, just your iPhone and jotting down notes throughout the day, but really taking inventory on what you are spending your time on. I think sometimes, especially when we're in the thick of it, our perception of time and energy on certain tasks can be a bit skewed because we're just trying to keep our head above water, right? So having that hard, that data, you know, and if you can do it for a week, I think that's even better to really see where are you spending your time? And then from there, is it actually where you want to be spending your time? And then looking at those tasks that are maybe in areas that you don't want to be spending so much area in is thinking about what I like to think of it as like what buckets those certain things fall into. And is it within your marketing? Is it within your sales strategy? Is it just the back end of your business? You know, where is it? And then once you can identify where most of those things fall into those buckets, I think that really gives creative entrepreneurs and online service providers a better lens into who would be the best fit for them, right? There's so many options out there within the online space. So really identifying what you need help with first is going to really ensure you're finding that great fit for you.
Oh, I love that. I think so much of that advice also applies to scrapbookers in terms of finding time for what's important for them, that that time audit can really be eye-opening to shift things around and figure out, okay, what's the reality of how I'm spending my time and where could the things that I want to fit in, whether it's scrapbooking, exercise, you know, starting a business, where would that fit if I made some small changes?
Yes. And exactly. I think the part is like small changes. You know, I know that, outsourcing or starting to delegate tasks, even if you are not self-employed, you know, you're just in a role that is growing, it can be really hard. I know I've been there in the past in management roles where it's really hard to kind of let go. But I think that once you can really narrow it in on what it is that you need help with, it makes that process of really trusting that person that you're handing things off to more easily done because it's specific. When things are vague, I think is often when, you know, we all feel a little murky. And this is totally applicable to, right, to our creative hobbies and all the other components of our day-to-day that we would like to see more of.
Yes, yes, yes. This has been such a fun conversation. Can you share where we can find you online and what you might have new or coming up later this year?
Yeah, so for my professional journey, if you are a creative entrepreneur or an online service provider who is looking for some assistance, my Instagram account is at createwithnatasha.co. I would love to hear from you. You can shoot me a DM over there. And then for my creative adventures journey, I am over on Instagram at Crafting Compassionate Love. I also have a YouTube channel under the same handle as well, where I share my different creative projects and have been sharing a bit more too on my gardening adventures and some other ways that I am expressing my creativity that is outside of just creative planning and memory keeping.
Okay, so I have to ask one more question. How did you come up with that handle?
Which one?
Crafting Compassionate Love, because it drew me in the first time I saw it. I was like, oh, who is this person? And what does she have to say? Because, you know, these are words that make me feel warm and fuzzy, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. Originally, my handle was when I first started, and I think I joined Instagram back in like 2016, maybe. I don't know if I want to scroll all the way back, but and it originally was Crafting Extreme Love. And because I had felt such an immense amount of change in my life, and that like self-love for myself through this creative practice that I had found or rediscovered, because I had just lost that part of me, really. And then with more time, I realized that actually creativity and crafting and everything that I stand for really is not an extreme measure. You don't need to redo everything and devote 10 hours a week to this. It's actually something that can show up in very small ways, but really make a big impact. And I feel like that act of creating and that taking that time is an act of, you know, self-compassion. I think that there's so much that comes up while we create, and just a way to give ourselves and even the stories that we're documenting love. And just, I think it's so many teaching opportunities as well, how we can craft, you know, more self-compassion and compassion for others through this journey.
Oh, thank you so much for telling me that story. This has been so delightful. Natasha, thank you again for spending time with me.
Thank you so much for inviting me to join you on this podcast. It's been such a pleasure chatting with you.
And to all of our listeners, please remember that you have permission to scrapbook your way.